All right, welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. It's a snowy Monday here on the North Shore, although I think it's finally let up. Looks like we've probably got about 3 or 4 inches here on K-Band. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, of course, Bill Proposky. You might be able to hear a snowblower in the distance in the background here as people are clearing outside already. Again, not that bad. It was kind of rainy all day, and then all of a sudden it shifted to snow, and it accumulated pretty quickly. Tim Kearns is actually out right now working on his snow removal, and he should be with us momentarily. He'll be checking in. Want to give you the lineup for this evening. We're going to be talking to a really special athlete over at St. John's Prep, Jake Vanna, who is familiar with most people in the area, who are akin to high school sports. Jake, a three-star athlete on several championship teams, state championship teams, I should add, and he's a junior at St. John's Prep. So we're going to talk to him primarily about the hockey season, how well it's going, but also I want to get into his experience. You're on the wrong one, Tim. Tim, can you call me back on the home phone?
On the what?
On the home phone.
Thank you.
There we go. All right, so stand by. And we'll be talking later on, of course, with our basketball insider, Mike Grenier, about the plight, of, not the plight, but how well the Celtics are doing. And so much other things to discuss as well on this wintry evening. We haven't had a lot of winter so far. Bill, of course, getting ready to put together the Salem News Sports Writers show for tomorrow. And, of course, that involves, as always, Executive Sports Editor Phil Stacey of the Salem News, the Salem News Assistant Sports Editor Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, sports writer, and Nick Kukru, the sports editor of the Gloucester Times, along with Bill Newell, of course, our own. And let me see if I can check in with Tim. He's having trouble getting back to me. Well, let's see if we can do it this way.
You've reached 978-57.
Okay, well, maybe we won't be talking with Tim tonight, so there you go. Anyway, that's the thing. The power ratings for high school have come out every Friday the last couple of weeks, and, of course, a lot of North Shore teams involved, particularly in hockey. In Division I, St. John's Prep has climbed back up on top. They were placed ranked number two for a while there under Catholic Memorial, but now the Prep is on top, and CM is in second spot, and they face off against each other again this week, I do believe. I'll have to check that schedule, but I'm pretty sure that the Prep and CM are back at it. And we can ask Jake that. He'll know. Just want to bring up the Prep's schedule here. Let me see if I can find it. Where did it go? I had it, and then it's going to be one of those nights, I guess. Here's the Prep right here. All right, the Prep is 9-1-1 right now. Get this, they've scored 52 goals and allowed 13 in 11 games. And they will be playing Catholic Memorial at home at the Essex Sports Center on Wednesday evening at 6:40 p.m. So that's a rematch. They were able to knock off CM 6-3 down there back on January 7th. So Prep with another big one coming up, and again, they are ranked number one in Division I boys hockey. St. Mary's boys are at 9-1-2, and they are number 11 in Division I. So a couple of North Shore schools highly ranked in Division I. Let's try Tim again one more time. Okay, I guess not. All right, so anyway, that's the way that goes. So let's see here. Let's check out some more schools here in the power rankings. We will go now to Division II in boys hockey. And we see Duxbury at the top of the heap there. And we have to go all the way down to number 11 to find a North Shore team, or at least an area team. Newburyport is at 5-5-1, and they are number 11. And Masconomet at 6-4-0 at number 12, and the Northeast Conference also has Gloucester in the top 20. They are number 19. Marblehead is at 21 with a record of 5-3-2. Gloucester, by the way, 5-4-1, but they've won, I think, two or three in a row, maybe four in a row at this point. They're playing very well. Tewksbury, by the way, is number 4 there on the North Shore, sort of. They are 8-1-0 in Division 2. So nobody breaking the top 10 in the Northeastern Conference of the Cape Ann League in Division 2 boys hockey. According to the power rankings of the MIAA, we go to Division 3, and Linfield's right there at the top, 9-0-1. We've been talking a lot with Linfield coach John Gardner, and we shall continue to do so in the future. So we'll talk with him, I'm sure, sometime during the week. Triton, ranked number 12, but how about Essex North Shore? Essex Tech at number 8. And Coach Leonard has his Hawks at 10-0-1. They are number 8 in Division 3. So those are kind of your top three schools. Danvers is number 19 in Division 3. Falcons with a record of 5 wins, 4 losses, and 2 ties. And let's see. We will go to Division 4 in boys ice hockey. Winthrop has dropped to number 2. They are 7-2-1 behind Norwell with a record of 10-1-0. And going down here, we got to go down to number 12, Amesbury of the Cape Ann League. 5 wins, 2 losses. They're number 12 in Division 4. And Swampscott is number 19. Big Blue now with a record of 5-4-0 above 500. So those are the boys' rankings in hockey, in the MIAA hockey. Let's check out the girls in Division 1. St. Mary's on top, 12-0-0. Winthrop number 4, 9-0. And Peabody at 9-2. So three of the top five teams right here in the area. St. Mary's at 12-0, Winthrop at 9-0, and Peabody at 9-2. And that's Girls Division 1. Newburyport at number 22. And I don't know if we have anybody in Division 2. Let's see, in the area. I don't see anybody in Andover, but that we don't really cover Andover. They're number 3 in Division 2 for girls. And I don't see anybody else. So Division 2, not so much. Division 1, top heavy. Very good. We'll very quickly go over to boys basketball. Division 1, Lawrence is up in number 1. And you got to go down to number 20 to catch a local school. Actually, number 19, Beverly is 7-4. And Lynn English is 11-0 at number 20. So Lynn English is unbeaten, and they're already down at number 20. No respect for the Northeast Conference, apparently, in Division 1 by the MIAA power rankings. And in number Division 2, Marlton Catholic is on top at 11-0. And the best-rated school locally is Marblehead at number 19 in Division 2 boys basketball rankings. And Division 3, we see St. Mary's on top. Hello there.
Yeah, I had a little trouble finding your number.
Okay. I called you back. Anyway, Tim Kearns has joined us. Welcome back, Tim. I hope you didn't hurt your back or anything out there clearing out the snow.
No, not yet.
No, not yet. Well, I hope you're not planning to hurt your back. So we were just going over the power rankings in MIAA, and we're going to get back to that, Tim. We're going to have Jake Vanna on. He's a junior St. John's Prep and a triple athlete at the Prep, winning multiple state championships. We'll have him on in a few minutes. And later on, after we talk with Jake, I want to talk to you about your interview with Dan Bauer, because, man, he's come full circle.
Yeah, he has, and it's I'm really happy for him. He's a great guy, and the interview was very easy to do. We've known each other for a long time, and for me, it was one of the best. I felt like one of the best ones I've done.
Good.
As I listened back through it, and he was very happy with it as well.
Well, that is posted on our website, and you can check it out. I think it dropped over the weekend. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. Coach Bauer, formerly Beverly High School, then moving on over to, he was also an administrator at Beverly and then moving over to Marblehead and now on to Danvers. So he's covering the Northeastern Conference, with his style. And also, Tim, we want to talk to Mike about, basketball later on, but, I don't know, what are your impressions, right now before we talk to Jake? What'd you look at? Did you watch the games over the weekend?
Yeah, I did. Very competitive. They were definitely worth watching, you know, even for the less than avid fan. I think they'd have gotten a good taste of what playoff football was all about. And, you know, I don't think when you get to that round of the playoffs, anybody can win. There was, you know, everybody still has their favorites, and the bookies still have their favorites. But you get that far, and there's always an opportunity for any one of the teams to come out on top, and we did see that. Kansas City, you know, held the form. I think San Francisco held the form last night against Dallas. So, you know, and as they say, you know, defense wins championships, and I think we got a taste of that last night.
Yeah, definitely. And all the quarterbacks who are left are definitely the elite of the league. All right, we're going to take a break, Coach, and then we'll come back with Jake Vanna of St. John's Prep Hockey, Soccer, and Lacrosse. This is MSONewsSports.com, and you're listening to North Shore Sports Night on this no longer stormy night, but people outside clearing the snow away. We'll be back in just a second, so stay with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore with great local sports coverage. Live play-by-play football, Monday night sports night show, the game night football show, feature spotlight interviews with coaches and players, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, and joining us this fall, Nick and Nick in the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. The place to hear and see positive local coverage, making connections that support the North Shore. The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're back now. I'm really pleased to be bringing on Jake Vanna of St. John's Prep Hockey, Soccer, and Lacrosse. Jake, how are you doing?
Doing good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, great to have you on, man. Appreciate it. Tim Kearns is our co-host. We go back and forth. We take turns talking with our guests and asking questions. And, Jake, tell you what, we're going to talk about hockey later because a gigantic game coming up, of course, this week. But, man, I got to ask you, you've experienced a lifetime of many athletes' championships. How many state championship teams have you been on so far?
I've been on four so far.
Tell me about one. Give me a chronology of that. What started first and what were you playing? Because you're a junior now, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a junior now.
All right. Give me in sequence the teams that you were on.
So, freshman year, the first one was on the cross. We had an amazing team that year. Michael Kelly was one of Princeton, Mike Lair's Tufts. It was an incredible year. It was COVID, so we only played teams in the Catholic Conference, but during the tournament, we were able to play town teams and then ended up beating BCI in the final. It was amazing. And then next year, sophomore year hockey in the winter. It was an incredible season. I won it with my cousins, Cole Blazer and Pierce Blazer. So we completed our goal of winning a state championship together, which was amazing. And then spring, sophomore year, we won against BCI again. It was a great season. A lot of ups and downs, but we pulled through in the end. And then the last one, soccer, this fall, which was an amazing season. Undefeated, 23-0-1. A bunch of great seniors I'm going to miss, but that was the last one, yeah, this fall.
Tim?
Jake, historically, the prep has a lot of tough opposition, but historically, BC High and Xaverian always stand out as probably your toughest opponent. Who have you found to be the tougher of the two?
It's funny. Funny you ask me. I feel like the last two or three years, every season I've played BCI like 100 times. you always see them a couple times in the regular season, then we always meet ends in the playoffs. But I'd say in the recent years, BCI has been the toughest opponent, but it's always a great game. And with COVID and everything, it feels like I've played them 100 times during my high school career, but definitely BCI.
All right, again, before we talk hockey, Jake, tell me more about lacrosse, because you, according to Salem News, you're committed to Princeton. Is that correct?
Yes.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, you've printed. You have visited the campus, and tell me about your feelings about going down there, playing lacrosse, but also getting your education down there.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Throughout the whole process, the goal was always to go to a school that can set you for life and also go to a lacrosse program where you enjoy it, you love the campus, you love the kids, and, like, you want to win. So Princeton, I went down there. It was my first visit, and I just instantly fell in love with it. I wanted to go to a campus that wasn't directly in the city. In Princeton, although New Jersey's in that area, the campus itself is, like, a big circle, so everywhere you walk around, you only see people go to Princeton. It's very relaxed, and that's exactly what I wanted. But along with the education, which is unbelievable, as the coach told me, he said, it's not just for the next 4 years. It sets you up for the next 40 years. This is exactly what me and my parents wanted. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have asked for anything better, and I'm so lucky to have the people around me who helped me get to that spot.
Jake, what do you think you'll major in? Do you already have an idea?
I'm one of those high schoolers who has no clue yet, but the great thing about Princeton is liberal arts, so there's many different majors I can take if I wanted to choose or change throughout my time there. So that's one of the benefits about Princeton. I don't need to, like, know what I'm doing in high school going into college. I can just choose until my sophomore year is when I have to pick. But just yeah, taking it by...
Years ago when Mr. Moore and I were going to school, generally, you know, it was 4 years and you were done, and then over a time... That four-year education sort of stretched out to be 6 years, as kids tended to change majors much more often than was the case when certainly we were in school. So the old 6-year rule, you know, you don't need to hurry.
right.
Coming out of Princeton, you could pretty much be set with a job anyways. Mm-hmm. But the key is to make it as stress-free as possible. Enjoy it as long as you can, because who knows, you may end up with a fifth year of eligibility like a lot of guys today.
Yeah, no, thank you. That means a lot. Just try to enjoy every minute of it, because you only get 4 years, so just trying to make the most of every day right now. Thank you for that.
Got to tell you the other thing, Jake. You know I told you how long I've been teaching, and I've been in broadcasting almost as long. My age, I'm still not sure what I want to do when I grow up. So take your time and make sure you find something that you absolutely love. You'll be fine. But that's a ways off yet. We got to get back to the prep right now. And, let's talk a little bit about hockey, because you guys, are back up to number one in Division One. And, you've got a giant game with Catholic Memorial coming up. And I know when you were talking about BC High, you definitely, were talking with respect about all your Catholic Conference, opponents. But, as the sheet I'm looking at here, are you leading your team in scoring right now?
I'm not too sure about the official stats, but I think me and Captain Will Van Sicklin, I think are up there either 1 and 2 or tied or one of the two. But
all right,
all the credit goes to my line mates, Christian Rose and Ben McGovery. I have the easy part. with some of the goals I get. But all right, credit goes to them.
I was going to ask you, tell me about those guys, because I see McGilvery's got 10 assists leading the team.
Yeah. Ben's unreal. So it was funny. We started the season, it was me, Christian Rosa, and Cole Blazer. And then after the third game, I believe, against BC High, they switched. So then it was me, Ben, and Rosa. And that's just, Ben's unbelievable. He just so, he breaks the puck out. He forechecks so hard and wins the puck, and he makes life easier for me and Christian. I can't even count on one hand how many like easy tap-ins I've had, because Ben goes through the entire team and then gives me an easy pass. But
wow,
he's just an all around workhorse, and I couldn't be happier to have him on my line.
Because historically, I've noticed, and I've been around the North Shore for a long time. I just want to know, I did get accepted to go to St. John's Prep way back when it was, a mere $600 a year to go there. And you could actually dorm at St. John's Prep back then. That's how far back I go. But historically, a lot of the prep teams get off to slow starts, and then all of a sudden they just steamroll through the second mid of the season and the second half of the season into the playoffs, and they're just among the toughest teams to play throughout all of the sport. What do you think historically has been that reason for maybe some of the teams getting off to slow starts?
Yeah, I think one of the benefits going to St. John's is that you have many different kids from towns. A lot of talented kids come from different places, so you get put on one team. But then the downfall of that is that, unlike many talent teams where they play together from elementary school through middle school and then they play on the same high school team, we're a whole new team every year. So this year, for example, for soccer, we lost like 11 or 12 seniors and we had a whole new team come in. And it took us a while. Luckily, preseason's 3 to 4 weeks in soccer, but it just took us a while to mesh and gel. And it was like hockey this year. We tied Hingham, lost to BC High. It's just because we lost every defenseman except one, Aiden Holland, who played valuable minutes for our team. And it just, when you bring a bunch of talented guys from different towns onto one team, it takes a while to mesh, even if it takes half the season or three-fourths of the season. But then once, with the amazing coaching we have at St. John's Prep, eventually towards the end of the season when we really try to hit our peak. And fortunately, a lot of teams do that, but even some teams never actually are able to gel and mesh, and you can see the downfall in the playoffs. But I think it's just a combination of having a lot of different talented guys from different towns have to be able to come together and work as a team before playoffs in order to succeed.
What does Coach Hansen do to help you guys bond like that, to help you get together when new kids come in? Because, you know, obviously as a grizzled veteran like yourself, you want the playing time. A youngster comes in, he wants the playing time, and you have to form and gel as a team. What are some of the things that Coach Hansen tells you guys or does with you guys?
Yeah, one thing that stands out definitely is that he tries to play as many guys as he can in one game, because he knows that with the amount of talent we have on our team, we have enough depth. But if he doesn't play everyone and not everyone's playing a game, then that can cause like kids to be like annoyed with their role on the team, or they won't have as much experience if like someone gets hurt. So he does a really good job of playing everyone the amount that like they deserve to play, but also like the amount of players they need to play in the game. So we roll four lines, which based off my experience, most teams don't do, but that works to our benefit because then everyone who goes on the ice all the time has fresh legs. And this year, it's been unbelievable. Our fourth line has like maybe 5 to 7 goals, which is like unheard of. So he tries to get everyone playing, get everyone confidence. So I always see him talking to players on the side if they're having like a slump or something. He always pumps them up, puts them on the right page. And he always tries to put guys in places to succeed at the highest level. Mm-hmm. So if he sees like one line's not meshing as well together, then he'll make a couple adjustments and try to see how they work. So he's always trying to make people the best possible hockey player they can be. And in the locker room side, he always emphasizes team first, because he knows a lot of guys are probably the best player on their public school team or their club team. And we all have a little bit of an ego. And he always emphasizes how like the teams that have won come together, are unselfish, and accept their role. And he uses like Bill Belichick's quote, do your job, accept your role. So he really gets everyone to buy into the ultimate goal, which is a state championship.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the amazing things that Coach Hansen does for our team.
Tim, final thoughts for Jake?
God. I would wish luck the rest of the season, and the best of luck next year. And then as you head down the pike to the Princeton, playing three sports. I played two in high school. I played basketball and then baseball. There's no real interim for you to change conditioning programs. How do you stay fit from one to the other?
Yeah, so the strength and conditioning staff at St. John's is amazing. They understand that from going from season to season, I don't have that much time to rest or get in shape for hockey season or then to start running again. So they work with me, and I do different workouts sometimes getting closer towards like hockey season because they know I haven't skated as much. And also, like, I have to give all the credit to my parents and grandparents. Throughout the season, sometimes I sometimes practice soccer or practice lacrosse during hockey season just to keep a little bit of the rust down, and they sacrifice everything to drive me to places that I need to go or buy the equipment that I need. So it just, all the credit goes to my parents and grandparents and the strength and conditioning staff at St. John's Prep for putting me in positions where I don't need to like struggle halfway through the season to finally get in shape, whereas I can slowly build my way into like hockey shape during soccer season. So I just, all the credit goes to everyone around me.
Well, I've seen where you've done that. So obviously your parents have done a good job with you too, man. It's great to hear you say that and to understand that as a young man. Obviously you're wise beyond your years. We're going to talk with you during lacrosse season, of course, some more, I hope, but I want to ask you one final question. And it has to do with complacency. Coach Hansen brought it up about a week ago, and he said, you know, one of the things, and it kind of woke me up a little bit. He said one of the things we have to be concerned with is that our team, our players, don't get complacent. And I said, well, gee, how can you when you're playing high school? And then he reeled off all the kids that you have, that you play with, including yourself, who've won state championships. And he's saying, you know, it's something that, you know, you can't expect to just put your skates on and you're going to win a state championship. You understand that, but how does the team understand that? And do you feel that among all your teammates?
Yeah, I feel like this team especially is doing a great job of not being complacent, because some teams, going back to back, if you're a new guy coming in and you're like all excited because the team won the year before, you sometimes come and expect, oh, I can't wait to come in and do what they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, it's not how it works with a new team. Other teams get better, other teams get worse. But I think our captains have done a great job of making sure we're confident, not cocky. That's our motto for the year. Because we have a lot of returning forwards and a couple defensemen, so we all know what it takes to win. But we also understand that it took a lot to win last year, and we're not just going to be able to, like, we're not going to be able to like just win it again easily.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Reminding us that we need to focus on each day at a time and get better and better and better, because last year's team, we weren't at our peak until right before we hit playoffs. So we're just trying to make sure that every day we get a little bit better, and then by the time we get playoffs, and that's where we're hitting full stride and hopefully make another run.
And you're heading down the stretch right now. Can't wait to see how the rest of this goes. Jake, man, thanks for taking the time. Great meeting you by the phone. Best of luck to you this week and the rest of the season, and we'll talk to you in the spring.
No, thank you so much for having me. That was a lot of fun.
Jake, one last thing for me. I want to thank you for the best explanation of the Prep's start to season I've ever had. I've asked a lot of people on this show what the reason is, and yours is absolutely the best and clearest explanation I've ever got.
Agreed. Second to that. Yep.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I was a little nervous. I was talking too fast, so you guys couldn't understand me, but that's reassuring. So thank you so much.
Great talking with you. All right. Good luck, Jake. Talk to you later.
Thank you. See ya.
Take care. Bye-bye. That is Jake Vanna, who is at St. John's Prep hockey player, lacrosse player, and soccer player. And he will be headed to Princeton in the springtime. And we will talk to him later. Tim, that was amazing, huh?
Unbelievable. I'll tell you, it was like he thought out and wrote out that response to my question.
Yeah.
A historic slow start.
And as he was saying it, I'm saying, how come we didn't think of that? That's so logical.
I know, really.
Oh, God. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to switch gears and talk with our basketball insider, Mr. Mike Grenier, as we continue here on North Shore Sports Night. Don't forget, you've got the Nick and Nick programs coming up on Thursdays. They drop both of our North Shore Sports Desk and Merrimack Sports Desk Valley, Merrimack Valley Sports Desk shows with with Dominic Nicastro and Nick Kukurul. They will be on Thursday, and they cover all over the North Shore as well. And, of course, the Sports Writers podcast will be dropping tomorrow morning with the Salem News Sports Writers and Bill Newell hosting, along with Nick Kukurul, who will also be on the program as he usually is. So that's what's coming up. We also will be talking with Mike, as we said, in just a few minutes, so stay with us.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore, a real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, our own basketball insider here on North Shore Sports Night. And, Mike, welcome back. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. We're doing fine. The Celtics are doing very fine.
They are. And before we talk about the fineness of the Celtics, and there's a lot to discuss here, as we all know, I know that I believe it was Gary Larrabee wrote a story about Chris Ford, and I know that you wanted to talk about Chris Ford as well, because that's one of the names we haven't talked about with you in your coverage of the Celtics, so let's start there.
Sure. You know, and Chris Ford, Gary Larrabee, I'm glad he wrote the story, because we were both involved with the Ford family and on different levels, because for one thing, obviously, Chris Ford played with the Celtics and was on the championship team in 1980-81 when Larry Bird's rookie year, second year, and then no, Larry Bird's second year, correct, because Kevin McHale came aboard that year. And, of course, Ford then became an assistant coach with the Celtics and won two more titles when Casey Jones was the head coach and Chris Ford was one of the assistants serving under Casey Jones. And, of course, then he became the head coach of the Celtics from 1990 to 95. And he had great North Shore ties, guys, because, as you may or may not have known, he and his family lived in Linfield. So we had a lot of contact with him that way. And his son, Chris Ford Jr., was an exceptionally good player at St. John's Prep. And I well remember a game where they played Durfee, I believe, and Chris Heron, remember that name?
Oh, yeah.
For the Celtics for a while. His older brother was a high school hotshot and was supposed to be like the best player in the state. And they came into St. John's Prep as a heavy favorite. It was a regular season game, and I covered that game. And Chris Ford Jr. badly outplayed Heron. And he scored like 29 points or something like that. And, you know, and you know, just was one of the great games that Chris Ford's son had. And, you know, he was just an exceptional player at St. John's Prep. And he had good parents. Chris and Kathy would come to a lot of St. John's Prep games. They really supported the kid. Even though Chris was involved in NBA playing and coaching, that family really supported the son. There was more than one son. But they really came out in full force to support their son. And I really was impressed with that, the fact that, you know, these professional guys usually sometimes are too busy to attend their own children's events, but Chris and Kathy Ford made sure they went to a lot of St. John's. And they were always approachable. You could talk to them about high school sports or academics or anything. And he was just a down-to-earth guy, you know? So, mm-hmm. Tim, I tell you, I got a funny, very funny Chris Ford story on a personal level. Back in the playoffs, I want to say 1984, the Celtics were playing a really good Knicks team that year. So I got on to cover at Madison Square Garden. The games were on a Friday and a Sunday against the Knicks. I believe Bernard King was with the Knicks, a really tremendous, extraordinary player. So Chris Ford is, of course, there, part of the coaching staff, an assistant coach. And on a Saturday, the day off between the two Celtics-Knicks games, Chris Ford was assigned to scout the New Jersey Nets, who were playing down at the Meadowlands Arena, which is like 15, 20 minutes drive from Manhattan. So I got a press pass for it just to go watch the game for fun, because I was a basketball addict, like I still am. So anyway, I go to the Port Authority, and I convince Chris Ford, Chris, instead of taking a cab and spending all that money, let's get on the bus for $3.50, and we'll go watch this Nets game that you have to scout. And he was kind of reluctant. I don't want to do that, Mike. So I convinced him, however. So we take the bus. Here's a Celtics assistant coach standing around 6'5", 6'6", looking pretty conspicuous on a bus from the Port Authority in New York City with a lot of ragtag people, including myself, you know, the riffraff of the world. And so we take the bus down to the Meadowlands of New Jersey. I watch the game. Chris Ford is there. He's taking notes, copious notes, because he's scouting. So after the game, you know, I had a round-trip ticket for the bus. I says, come on, Chris, we're going back. He says, Mike, no, we're not doing bus anymore. You're hopping in the cab with me. And my wife, Arlene, was with me. So, he gave us a treat. He paid the tab to get back to Manhattan, back to the team hotel. And then the Celtics played the Knicks the very next day. So to me, though, it illustrates again that he was willing to go with a sports writer on a bus out of the Port Authority in New York City for $3.50. And, and then he sprang for the cab on the way back.
But obviously only willing to go so far with you, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. He was only willing to go so far. And, hey, I don't know. Maybe he didn't want to pay the $3.50. He felt it was better to pay the $15 to take the cab ride or something back, you know. But it was funny. It was just a great little, you know, anecdote. And my remembrances of Chris Ford are so good. And, of course, we know, right, guys, that he hit the first three-pointer in NBA history.
Yep.
Opening game. And I guess, Tim, he got credit for the opening three officially from the NBA because the Washington Bullets played a half an hour later that night, October 12th, 1979, I want to say. And Chris Ford hit the three, and then Kevin Grevy of the Washington Bullets, half an hour later, hit a shot in the first quarter. But their game started 35 minutes later, so therefore Ford gets credit officially for the first three-pointer, and Kevin Grevy was the second one to do it.
Now, there is a piece of trivia.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Chris Ford, but who is the next guy?
That's right, and only because his game started later. So Chris Ford was fortunate that he goes down historically because the game was, you know, it's at 7 o'clock at night as opposed to 7:30 p.m.
All right, I don't want to get into your Power Fives. You do have a Power Five, right?
Oh, no question, Rick.
Okay.
And we have surprises in the Power Five.
Yeah, I can see that, the way the standings have changed since last we talked.
Yes.
But before, let's get to the current situation. You and I texted the other night. A very impressive win with so many guys out of the lineups for the Celtics. And, you know, it's funny. We were just talking with a St. John's Prep superstar about complacency and how to fight that as an athlete when you're at the top and you've won so many times. And, I'm wondering about the Bruins and about the Celtics in the term complacency. And here you see these guys coming off the bench and just playing their butts off. I'll always start with Malcolm Brogdon. But tell me your thoughts about the game the other night where so many bench players contributed.
Well, yeah, I was impressed. Well, first of all, Rick, I think just for a second, we go back to that Golden State Warriors game, a game the Celtics wanted badly.
Mm-hmm.
And we know they shot very poorly that night, yet somehow they hung around and stole that game from the Golden State Warriors in overtime on a night when, like, Tatum shot 9-for-24 and Brown did. A lot of guys shot poorly that night, and they somehow pulled it out in overtime. But, of course, the concern was that I believe Jason Tatum played like 50 minutes, which is not good. You don't want to see that, halfway through the season. It's going to take a toll in the long run. So I'm kind of glad in a way that he sat out the next game. And what happens in that next game against Toronto, Tatum doesn't start. And then during the course of the game, you lose Marcus Smart and Robert Williams. And you mentioned Brogdon. I got to mention, of course, Peyton Pritchard, of course, who came off the bench and hit 4 3-pointers. And how excited were his teammates in the flow of the game, when they call the timeout, when Toronto was forced to call a timeout after Peyton Pritchard hit a big three-pointer to put the Celtics further ahead or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was great to see that camaraderie and the bench pulling so hard for a guy like Peyton Pritchard, whose playing time obviously has been on and off. So that was great to see. But we got to talk about Brogdon, guys, because I check last six games, he's averaging 20 points a game.
Okay.
And not only that, he had 30 in one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
On the road in Utah, and he had, 23, I believe it was, in that game against the Raptors the other night when Marcus Smart was out. And not only that, he's throwing in 6, 7, 8 assists in those games. So he's got a starter's ability, and the luxury for the Celtics is when they do have Marcus Smart playing, they can bring a Brogdon off the bench, and he's such an impact guy. Tim, what do you think of that?
Oh, you know, it certainly is, and you watch him play, and there's no sense, and it's because he's a veteran, and he's a very skilled player, but there's no sense of urgency in his game. There's no sense of nervousness in his game. You know, he just melds into the flow of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most impressive things that I found about him. You know, a lot of guys will come in there and they're almost skittish. They're running all around the floor, and you're like, okay, calm down.
Right.
You know, he's just there, and he knows what's going on, and he knows what the expectation is. And it's got to be very comforting to
no doubt.
The coaching staff and to the rest of the teammates that this guy just comes off the bench like, you know, okay, you know, I've been here since the beginning of the game, and there's nothing wrong. We're just going with it. And it's amazing that the role he plays, if they're down by a few points when he comes in, you know, how little time it takes for them to suddenly be leading the game. Like, I turned it on the other night, and they were down 6-something. It was late in the game.
Right.
And the next thing you know, they're up.
Yep.
Like, okay, no, this is over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Brogdon, and what's great about him, Tim and Rick, is that even with the increased playing time, you know, his shooting percentage remains really high. He's shooting like 48% overall. And he's become actually the best three-point shooting guy on the team. He's shooting threes at a 45% clip. And naturally, it doesn't take as many as Tatum or Jaylen Brown, or even Marcus Smart. However, he's shooting those at 45%, and he's taking high percentage threes. By that I mean he waits for the defense to clear out, right, Rick? And he'll take it from the top of the key or from the wing or from a spot that's real comfortable to him where it's not going to be a hotly contested three. I just like his decision-making, whether he's taking the three or taking the ball to the basket, right, Tim? He's just a really cerebral player, and I love what you said about him being the calm around the storm, you know, and he's the most tranquil player on that team. He's very even-keeled from 1 minute to the next, and it doesn't matter whether the team is up 16 or down 18. He just plays his game and gets the Celtics either further ahead or, you know, making a rally. So I just love him coming off the bench. I think it bodes well for late in the season in the playoffs when the coach will have to rely on him. I think he's a guy that we'll be able to count on.
I like
him.
Go ahead, Tim.
I think 100%, you know, comes from what I said before, because he comes in and there's just this calmness in his demeanor, and that enables him to get into that flow, and nothing is rushed. The jump shots aren't rushed, whether they're two or they're threes. And the decision to, you know, suddenly head down the lane, it's just there. It's strong. It's confident. He knows he's going to be able to get there. And that is such a learning tool for a lot of the younger guys on the team, that this is a way in which you should approach the game.
Oh, there's no doubt. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I think the younger players on the team can watch him play in that even-keeled, even-tempered manner and learn from that, because no matter how chaotic the situation might be on the floor, he's just going to play his game, like I said. He's just so calm out there, and he's so efficient. He's a very good shooter. He drives the ball really well. He drives the ball as well as anybody on our team, and that includes Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he finds a way to penetrate and finish through contact a lot of times. So he's an extremely valuable piece of the puzzle here, and I'm so glad the Celtics were able to get him.
You know, they talked about the importance of the acquisition in the preseason. I don't think a lot of people really understood how big of an acquisition it was. I certainly think, because I wasn't really all that familiar with it. I'm sure a lot of people in Boston and Celtics fans around the country was, okay, yeah, well, what's all the big hype about this guy?
Well, right.
Now, after seeing him perform game in and game out, you suddenly have an idea of why Danny and the rest of the highbrows all thought, this is the guy we need. This is a guy that can bring a stability.
That's right. That's right. No doubt about it. And Rick, you know what, Tim, and Rick, I think also to a guy that we haven't talked about much this season, but who also gives them a lift off the bench, and sometimes even when he starts, Grant Williams. I mean, we can, sometimes I get upset with him with talking so much to the officials, right, Rick? We don't like to see that. He talks to the officials a lot. He talks to the opponents a lot. I don't know if he does a lot of trash talking, but the other night he gets a start. He scores 27 against the Raptors. He shoots the three very well. He finishes off at the basket, even against bigger guys. Sometimes he's forced because he's a wide body, but he's not tall. He has to play the opposing team's big man in the pivot, and he has to body up against them. He takes a lot of physical pounding, and I think he's been a real asset this year. I think he's made improvements every year that he's been with the team, and I think so far he's having his best season. He's shooting it well, he's defending well, and it doesn't matter whether he's starting or coming off the bench. He's pretty fearless, and he'll give you his all. He goes to the floor for the ball. He's another good piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, he's a prototypical Celtic. I'm glad you brought that up because when you mention arguing with the refs, the first thing that pops into my head is, hey, I haven't seen Jason Tatum do that lately. As I'm knocking on wood, it seems like there's a little maturity growing among the top two. And I want to ask you, Mike, about defense. Does it look like it's getting better?
Oh yeah. But you know, every time we say that, Rick, then they give up 126 to Orlando or something.
150,
no,
yeah.
So I maybe we should. But no, I do think it's getting better. I think Robert Williams obviously makes the team defense better, and he's a very good individual defender. But I think it gets a little hairy at times when Robert Williams either is not available for a game or he gets hurt in the middle of a game like he did the other night, and we don't know what to expect. They have not been able to establish a defensive pattern overall, because of Robert Williams, the fact that he can in and out of the lineup. And so they haven't had a total defensive identity, I guess is what I'm saying, because he's been out. I tell you what, though, Al Horford, as we saw the other night, Rick, and I know you texted me, made some incredibly great defensive plays down the stretch. You know, winning the two, well, blocking shots at the rim and then, like, coming up with tying his opponent up for a jump ball two times in the final 6 or 7 seconds of the game and winning the jump ball and the Celtics running out the clock. So, you know, I think Al Horford has his moments where he's still an above-average defender.
Yeah, but you know, Mike, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. With Williams able to pick up and play good minutes in the middle with other guys being able to pick up minutes, he's able to get his rest, get his breathers, and then when he's in there, go full bore.
Yep.
You know, put the pedal to the metal and play with all the intensity he can, and that's making a difference.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you know, it's funny, Robert Williams seems to get hurt, right, Rick, on these freaky plays. The other night, it had nothing to do with crashing into the basket. It was his own teammate, Jaylen Brown, who banged into him. And then next thing you know, Robert Williams had a hyperextended knee. And I don't have the game. I don't know what his availability is, you know, next couple days here. But that seems to happen to him a lot. Like, it's just unlucky or snake bitten or something. But I would love to see him play a stretch of, like, 20 straight games, let's say, where he's uninjured and can be totally effective on offense and defense, because he adds so much to the overall defensive intensity that the Celtics want to play with.
He does,
and, so, you know, bottom line is I hope that he's healthy throughout the playoffs, and the playoffs could be very long for this team if they want to go where they want to go, which is the NBA Finals. So I'm just hoping that he can avoid those nagging injuries that take him out for two or three games, because he's such a big piece of this team, and you're hoping he's going to hang on and be healthy.
Oh, it's funny. I was thinking of the big guy down there, Zion, and guys who get hurt, like Gronkowski. And someone once said, "Well, you know, look how frail he is." And I'm thinking, "Huh? That's not the right word you use. he may be injury prone, but he ain't frail."
That's right. He's not frail. And Robert Williams, the thing about him, he's a little bit undersized height wise, but he can play. Let's say if they play the Miami Heat with Adebayo, who's like 6'10", 6'11". Giannis was a whole different animal. Giannis can overpower just about anybody. Guys that are bigger than Robert Williams, doesn't matter. But Robert Williams is capable of playing guys that are taller because he's so athletic. And he'll give you everything he can physically. I love the way he goes to the floor for loose balls. You don't see many big men diving on the floor for loose ball. Giannis happens to be one of them. Robert Williams is another. But, you know, he will give you everything he has when he's out there. You just kind of wish that he didn't get banged up so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rick, we love Marcus Smart as a defender and as an overall team leader. But sometimes, this sounds crazy, but sometimes it seems like he plays too hard. By that I mean he gets in the guy's face and he gets squeezed on these picks. And next thing you know, he's grabbing his ankle and his hamstring or whatever. He just sometimes needs to avoid the contact. He welcomes the contact because he'll pick up charges. But if it means missing two or three or four games, I don't like to see that because I want to see him in the lineup all the time because he's such a huge part of it on the defensive side for the Celtics.
Tim?
I'm trying to fathom. You know, he's not overly bulky,
right?
You know, but how does one become so injury prone? You know, I turned out to be that way, but it wasn't until later in my life.
I think some guys play so hard that they end up in a position of, you know, there's so much contact in the game. Marcus Smart, for example, he plays so hard that sometimes he tries to break a pick that's set by the opposing team, and he gets his leg smashed and all. So I guess he feels that he doesn't want to give up on any possession. If he's guarding a great player, he doesn't want a guy to get behind a pick and shoot an open three-pointer, like a guy like Donovan Mitchell or some of the other great guards they have in the league. So he's going to fight through every pick, and sometimes this leads to collisions, you know, and it happens. So, but knowing Marcus Smart is, you know, supposedly day-to-day, he'll come back sooner rather than later, and there's nothing any coach would say to him that's going to make him play not as hard as he already does.
Yeah.
So that's his DNA. That's the way he's going to play every day. He's going to play extremely hard every night. But it's nice to know that Malcolm Brogdon is there to start when Marcus Smart isn't there.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I had a fanfare for Mike's Power 5, so let's get
here
to it.
Go.
Let's
here
get
we
it.
Go. Now, guys, I'm going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks at the number 5 spot because Giannis has missed the last 5 or 6 games with a knee injury, and they're still hanging around at number 3 spot in the Eastern Conference. Now, I got to say, our guy from the North Shore, Pat Connaughton, has been starting for the last 14 or 15 games. He equaled the season high the other night with 15, and he's playing well in the starting role. He's playing 31, 32 minutes a game. But anyway, bottom line is the Milwaukee Bucks are number 5, okay? Our new appearance in the Power 5, Rick, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yes, yes, yep.
They sort of snuck up on everybody.
Yep.
They've surpassed, you know, the Brooklyn Nets and the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have played pretty well all year. And Embiid is having an MVP-type season, and they move into the number 4 spot. Now, at the number 3 spot, we have the Memphis Grizzlies, who just were coming off an 11-game winning streak, and they finally lost the other night. So they're number 3. And then you got the Denver Nuggets, who won like 9 in a row before losing without Jokic over the weekend. So they're number 2. And, of course, the Boston Celtics, who have won 9 straight, go back to the number 1 spot after slipping to number 2 with a couple weeks ago when, obviously, the Brooklyn Nets were playing so great. But Brooklyn, obviously, without Kevin Durant, has slipped. They've fallen. They've lost like 4 of their last 6 or 5 of their last 7. So they slip out of the top 5. But the Celtics back there at the number 1 spot, and they've created some separation, right, from the other Eastern Conference teams. They're 4.5 ahead of Philly. You know, they're 5.5 ahead of the Bucks. So if they could just keep playing well here, they're a clear-cut favorite to finish in the top spot in the Eastern Conference.
You know, you look back over probably the past 5 or 6 years, and I don't think anybody predicted that we'd see the Celtics in this position at this point in the season.
Right.
And it certainly speaks well to the management and what they've done and the drafting that's gone on with both general managers. Not only the drafting, but the trades that they've made. It's, you know, they've been, people have been, sports writers have been writing about, you know, the ability of the Celtics nowadays to go back and do some red owl back kind of dealing where they basically fleece the other team.
Right, right. Yeah, I like the composition of the team, right, Tim, in the sense that they have some veterans like Al Horford and Marcus Smart, who now is like eighth year, and, you know, the younger guys like Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Peyton Pritchard. And, you know, I just like the fact that they have a nice mix of younger guys and older guys. And Mazzulla, I guess we have to give Joe Mazzulla, the young coach, credit, because he's kept them afloat when they had that little mini slump. And everybody was worried that they were just losing it altogether. Kept them together. They got over that slump, and now one even hardly ever talks about the slump because they've won nine straight. So, you know, it bodes well for hopefully what Mazzulla can add to the team in the playoffs.
Well, Mike, as
we... Let me ask you. There was a lot of talk over the last week, 10 days, about the Celtics having to clear a couple of bodies from the team and make an acquisition of maybe a really true center. And Pritchard's name kept coming up. And then you turn on the game the other night, and he's got 20-plus points. He's heaving in three-pointers all over the place. And you're thinking, this is the last guy I want to leave the team.
Right. Right, yeah. Well, you know, I think when you compare, if the Celtics were to play the Bucks, Tim and Rick, they would have a clear disadvantage size-wise because the Bucks would start Giannis, who's like 7 feet, basically, and Brook Lopez, who's another 7-footer. And Bobby Portis is a pretty big guy coming off the bench at 6'8", 6'9". So they have a lot of size, okay? So that's why you have to hope that Robert Williams can stay healthy and that he can play that big man position. And, of course, Horford is a pretty big guy. And, you know, Luke Kornet, he can give you limited minutes and be effective. He showed that, right, Rick, against the Raptors the other night.
Yeah.
And Horford gave him all the credit in the world post-game for giving him really strong minutes in the second half, getting a few rebounds. He's certainly not athletic. He's kind of awkward, but he knows he's a fundamental player, and he knows to hang around the basket, get those tip-ins, and he'll block an occasional shot, play pretty good defense. So, you know, at least he's good, decent backup insurance. I think, Tim, if they were looking for a big man, they're hard to come by on the trade deadline market. I think just a really good big man, it's just so hard to find that type of guy to come in and, let's say, and add to the roster, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, who wants to make the rich richer, and who wants to make the number one team that much more imposing?
That's right.
And, you know, you're going to trade away a guy with good skills who's really coming into his own at this particular time, and you're going to get some schlep, and we don't need schleps. We need quality players. And the way these guys hustle, I'll go against the 2 7-footers and just run them into the ground like John Havlicek used to do.
Right, exactly. I like the roster right now, Rick. What do you? I mean,
well, I'm going to. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a homework assignment.
Yes.
We haven't hit the All-Star break yet, which is a little past the halfway mark. But
right.
I was wondering if you'd be willing to put together a report card as Professor Grenier on the players on the Celtics, the 10, 12 players on the team, a midseason report card, and also on the coach for next week.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I prepared one for my brother-in-law, who follows the Celtics religiously since the 1960s. And we go back and forth on that, so I actually have a report card.
Perfect.
That I can access.
Okay. All right, Mike. As always, man, it's a lot of fun. It's a quick half hour. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
You're welcome, guys. Stay out of the snow.
All right. Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye now.
All right.
All right, guys.
That is Mike Grenier, sports writer and sports historian, and our Celtic and our basketball insider, really, not just the Celtics. Tim, any final thoughts?
No, just hoping the Celtics stay healthy and keep bringing us the kind of classic Celtic basketball, which is, you know, slow down when you have to, run when you can, and drive them into the floor.
All righty, Coach. You stay well. Don't hurt yourself out there shoveling, and we'll talk to you next week.
All righty, Rick. You take care.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. That's Tim Kearns, our co-host, and, of course, our ambassador of goodwill and our super sports analyst here on MSO. Bill Newell, working feverishly tonight, getting ready the Salem News sports podcast for tomorrow. That will include Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor of the Salem News, Matt Williams, assistant sports editor, Nick Giannino, sports writer for the Salem News, and Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, as Bill will be hosting that program as he always does. The program dropping on Tuesday morning. And don't forget, on Thursday mornings, we have the Sports Desk's programs for here on the in the area, North Shore Sports Desk with Dominic Nicastro and Nick Kukuru, and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk as well. Plus, don't forget our daily newscast and our daily news magazine, North Shore Today, on MSO News Sports. So on behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Take care, be well, do the right thing. Bye-bye.